ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Narayana Paro Yogo Narayana Param Tapa Narayana Param Ganam Narayana Para Gati Narayana Paro Yogo Narayana Param Tapa Narayana Param Ganam Narayana Paragati Narayana Paro Yogo Narayana Param Tapa Narayana Param Ganam Narayana Paragati Narayana Paro Yogo Narayana Param Tapa Narayana Param Ganam Narayanam Paragati. Someone could chant. Watajis. Word for word. Narayana Paraha. Just to know Narayana. Yogaha. Concentration of mind. Narayana Param. Just with an aim. To achieve Narayana. Tapaha. Austerity. Narayana Param. Just to realize a glimpse of Narayana. Jnanam, culture of transcendental knowledge. Narayana Para, the path of salvation ends by entering the kingdom of Narayana. Gatihi, progressive path. Translation. All different types of meditation or mysticism are means for realizing Narayana. All austerities are aimed at achieving Narayana. Culture of transcendental knowledge is for getting a glimpse of Narayana. And ultimately, salvation is entering the kingdom of Narayana. Purport. In meditation, there are two systems of yoga, namely Ashtanga Yoga and Sankhya Yoga. Ashtanga Yoga is practiced in concentrating the mind, releasing oneself from all engagements by the regulated processes of meditation, concentration, sitting postures, blocking the movements of the internal circulation of air, etc. Sankhya Yoga is meant to distinguish the truth from inferiors. But ultimately, both systems are meant for realizing the impersonal Brahman, which is but a partial representation of Narayana, the personality of Godhead. As we have explained before, the impersonal Brahman effulgence is only a part of the personality of Godhead. Impersonal Brahman is situated on the person of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as such, Brahman is a glorification of the personality of Godhead. This is confirmed both in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Matsya Purana. Gati refers to the ultimate destination or the last word in liberation. Oneness with the impersonal Brahmajyoti is not ultimate liberation. Superior to that is the sublime association of the personality of Godhead in one of the innumerable spiritual planets in the spiritual sky. Therefore, the conclusion is that Narayana, or the personality of Godhead, is the ultimate destination for all kinds of yoga systems, as well as all kinds of liberation. This is a purport given by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharne Nirvasesa Sunyavani Paschatya Deshatarne. So in this verse, it talks about cultivation of knowledge, and in the purport also describes about Sankhya Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga. So there are different systems of yoga, and all these processes are meant to realize Krishna. And Bhakti Yoga is on the topmost platform. That's realization of the personality of God. That's the actual platform of security. And all these other paths, they're going to the same place, but they haven't reached the ultimate goal. Just like if you want to reach the top of the building and there's 100 steps, if you simply go to the 10th step and stop there, then that's incomplete. You haven't reached your destination. So these different systems of yoga, is they help you go to the higher levels, but if you just stay there, then you can't reach the ultimate situation. So this Sankhya Yoga is the analytical study of the nature of matter and spirit, and it's meant for those who like to engage in speculation and experimental knowledge. So this system is there, but this is not recommended by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. These systems are very difficult to perform. People formerly, they used to perform these systems more in former yugas, but people were more qualified or they had better facilities. Just like in Satyuga, they would live for 100,000 years. So in this way, they had time to practice all these other systems of yoga. But in this age, we only have 100 years at most, And so the recommended process is the process of bhakti yoga, which is actually recommended in other ages also. But in this age, it's only by bhakti can one attain Krishna. Maybe for a few, that's possible to perform these others, but that's only for a few. So this Brahmajyoti, this impersonal realization by Sankhya Yoga and by Stanga Yoga, this is incomplete realization. There are five types of liberation. One is to merge into the Brahman effulgence. One is to attain the same planet as the Lord, to have the same bodily features as the Lord, the same opulence as the Lord, and to have and to associate with the Supreme Lord. So any of these, a devotee will accept any of these four processes, except he will not accept merging to the Brahman, because there's no association, there's no service there with the Supreme Lord. In the Brahman, Brahmajyoti, we find there's two qualities there. There's eternity and knowledge. So in this material world, we find this Brahmajyoti, it reflected on the sun and the moon. Originally, the light of the sun and the moon comes from the Brahmajyoti. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, I am the light of the sun and the moon. But the devotee of the Lord, he prays to the Lord, as mentioned in the Sri Krishna Upanishad, to remove this dazzling effulgence, so he could just see the form of the Lord. So this Brahmajyoti, it covers our perception of the internal potency. So in this way, the devotee prays to the Lord to remove this covering. So it's mentioned here about the cultivation of knowledge. So knowledge comes from Narayana. Simply by the breathing of Narayana comes the four Vedas. The Rig Veda, Sama Veda, Yajur Veda, Atharva Veda, the Puranas, the Mahabharata, they all come from the breathing of Narayana. So one may say, well, how can knowledge come from somebody simply by breathing? Because Krishna is absolute. He could perform anything with any one of his senses. He can see with his, he can impregnate with his eyes, he can see with his hand. In this way, he could breathe, just by his breathing, he could give transcendental knowledge. And also, the devotees of the Lord, they give this knowledge, just like it's mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam, just by the flapping of the wings of Garuda, is produced the Sama Veda. And the essence of the Sama Veda is the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So in this way, simply by the flapping of his wings, if one is advanced, one could hear the Maha Mantra, as Kardama Muni did. So this knowledge comes from, is passed down by the sixth succession. So originally comes from Narayana, it comes from Krishna, and is passed down through the sixth succession from Lord Brahma down to Narada, to Vyas, to Madhavacharya. In this way, the knowledge comes down. This is how we receive the knowledge from Krishna. So he through the sixth succession, through the devotees of the Lord, through the instructing spiritual master, the saintly persons, through the Vedic literatures, and the super soul within the heart. And as we read in the last chapter, Krishna gives knowledge to the gopis simply by kissing them. So in this way, people attain this transcendental knowledge. So all knowledge comes from the Veda. From the Vedic literature, it comes from the original Vedic texts. All knowledge in the world, whether it's mundane or transcendental, it comes from the original Vedic literatures. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, by all the Veda, I am to be known. Indeed, I am the knower of the Vedas, and I am compiler of Vedanta. So the Vedic literature is very concise. It's full of meaning. As it is stated, that transcendental literature is mentioned as that which has minimum words and maximum meaning. That's one of the definitions of Vedic literature. Whereas mundane literature has volumes of books, volumes of words, but there's no meaning to it. It's simply useless. So this is the advantage of taking to Vedic literature. One gets so much meaning, so much direction, that one can perfect his life and go back to home, back to Godhead. So by this taking shelter of this Vedic knowledge, one could cross over out of this material to the spiritual world. As it's stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, even if one is the most sinful of all sinners, if he is situated on this boat of transcendental knowledge, he can cross over the ocean of miseries. So this Vedic literature is like a boat and is also described as a bridge or setu, upon which this bridge is connected from here to the material world, and it goes all the way over to the spiritual world. So by taking advantage of this Vedic literature, taking advantage of this bridge, one could cross over the ocean of material existence and attain to the spiritual world at Krishna's lotus feet. So this knowledge, this beginning of knowledge, begins with humility. This is the beginning of knowledge. Without humility, understanding is not really possible. So, and by this, and by knowledge, one can actually surrender unto Krishna. So the first principle to obtain knowledge is that one has to become prideless. That's the first qualification to surrender, to attain knowledge. But if one is proud, then I'm the Lord of material nature, I'm doing so many things, then this is simply craziness. What have we done? How are we the Lord of material nature? We come here, we stay for some time, and then we're forced to leave. So how are we the Lord of material nature? No, we should understand that I'm not the Lord of material nature. I'm simply suffering this material world. I should understand what my actual position is, what actually belongs to me and what does not belong to me. And in this way, by getting that understanding, one can become free from the dualities of happiness and distress, pain and pleasure. And in that way, one will get real understanding. And that way, he'll be able to surrender to Krishna. Otherwise, it is not possible to surrender to Krishna. So this pridelessness, it's also described as one of the items of knowledge in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita texts, 8 through 12. It mentions around 20 items of knowledge. And this pridelessness is one of those items of knowledge. So Krishna himself, this is described in the first canto, that one of his qualities is pridelessness. He has this quality of pridelessness. And this is also one of the 26 qualities of a devotee, is he doesn't have pride. And this pridelessness is one of the symptoms of bhava. So in the different stages of devotional service, there's shraddha, some faith, sadhu sangha, vajanakriya, anarchana vritti, ruchi, And one of the last stages is bhava before prema. So in the bhava stage, one has doesn't have pride. He is prideless. But this pride is one of the qualities of a devotee. And this is also one of the qualities of those who are demoniac. It is stated in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, this is one of the qualities of those who are demoniac. So this quality of pride is those who are demons, they are born with this. It says they have this when they are in the wombs of their mothers. And after they are born, they gradually manifest this quality of pride. So in this way, this is a very demoniac quality. And it's one of the, pride is one of the five types of illusion that keeps us in material bondage. So because of the darkness of ignorance, we forget our relationship with Krishna, and we become overwhelmed by the illusions of hate and attachment, pride, ignorance, and false ego. And by that, we become covered over by the material nature. So this pride consists of three types of possessions: the possession of wealth, education, and followers. So we have to be very careful by these things, because they could be detrimental in the progress of Krishna consciousness. So pride is, we may be very proud, or we may take pride in our responsible service, but we have to give credit to Krishna. Otherwise, there will be so many problems. We can't do things very nicely. So this is false pride. But there's real pride, just like it's mentioned here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that Maharaj Parikshit was proud that he had, or he took pride in, he was a descendant of the Pandavas. So this is real pride. Or a devotee, it says, a devotee takes pride in that he's thinking of Krishna. So this is actual real pride. But by false pride, austerity is spoiled. And when austerity is spoiled, this is one of the four legs of religiosity, austerity. And when austerity is spoiled, then we find meat eating like that. So it's also described how this austerity, when there isn't austerity, then there's no nonviolence like that. So we may have so many material assets in our possession, so many opulences, but if they're not used in the service of Krishna, then they can be an impediment. We will become blind by them, and we won't be able to appreciate the good qualities and the nice qualities of great personalities. So anything that isn't used in Krishna's consciousness, Srila Prabhupada explains, there's simply so many zeros. But besides being a zero, they're actually minuses, because they actually make things worse. So Krishna does not like his devotees to be proud. This is mentioned in connection with the rasa dance in the Krishna book, that the gopis became proud that they were with Krishna. And this way, Krishna didn't like that pride, and he left the gopis for some time. So Krishna doesn't like to see that his devotee is proud of his service.
If a devotee thinks he's better than others, then Krishna changes his attitude towards his devotee. So this sense of pride is the cause of the suffering in this material world. Therefore, it is stated that one should act with different people in different ways. When one meets somebody more qualified than himself, one should be pleased and not envy him. One should be jolly to receive him. And one who is less qualified than himself, he should not deride such a person, but he should be compassionate towards him and try to lift him up to the standard. And if one finds somebody who is equal to him, he should make friendship with him, not that one should be proud of one's activities. So by doing this, as stated in the fourth canto, I think it's with Dhruva Maharaj, that by doing this, by taking this attitude, one will not be afflicted with the three full miseries of material nature. So also at one of the qualities of knowledge, the items of knowledge, is self-control. So self-control means that one should not, self-control means one should only accept those things which are not detrimental to a devotional service. So in this way, one should only gratify the senses as much as needed to maintain the body. One shouldn't accept more than one is needed. So in this way, one should control the senses. And of all the senses, the tongue is the most important and most uncontrollable. Therefore, one should simply engage the tongue in talking about Krishna and about eating Krishna prasadam, utilizing his sight and seeing Krishna, and his ears and hearing about Krishna. In this way, one will be able to advance in spiritual life. And by practicing self-control, one can gradually come to Krishna. Otherwise, this is not possible. Only by self-control can one actually come to Krishna. So this is one of the qualities by which the brahmanas work. They engage in self-control. And this is also mentioned in the 20 items of knowledge as specifically one of the qualities of the householders. So all the ashrams are meant for self-control. But specifically, this is mentioned in connection with the householders because they have some license for sense gratification. So not that one's a householder and one thinks that, oh, I have my wife, therefore I can engage in sex life as much as I want. No, this is not scriptural. One should engage in sex life only for the having Krishna-conscious children. Otherwise, such sex life is demoniac. And by this, it is not possible to go back to home, back to God. So one has to control the senses. And by self-control, one becomes free from false hopes. So another quality, another item of knowledge is mentioned as non-violence. So one who is, the meaning of actually non-violence is that he is not envious. This is the actual meaning of non-violence. Therefore, those who are great devotees, the perfect paramsahamsas, they are perfectly non-envious of other living entities. So this non-violence is there, not that in society people say, yeah, we want non-violence. We want non-violence for the human beings, But for the animals, they could simply be sent to the slaughterhouse. So this is Satan's philosophy. This is simply the philosophy of a madman. And by such a philosophy, they think that, well, we just practice nonviolence, and who cares about the animals? But by that violence to the animals, that will simply perpetuate wars in society, and in this way, so many young men will be sent to the war fields and be slaughtered in that way. So they think, oh, we just practice a nonviolence among the human beings and everything else will be okay. No. One has to practice nonviolence towards all living entities. And the brahmanas, specifically, they engage in nonviolence. But those who are kshatriyas, they apparently have to be violent. I say apparently because when they cut down the criminals, when they hang those who murder others, they actually are doing them a favor. Just like if one does not execute somebody who murders someone, then that person has to suffer more in their next life. So it is a good thing that such criminals are put to death. And the kshatriyas, they have to engage in violent activities. They have to curb down the criminals, the culprits. Otherwise, such criminals will break the principles, the moral principles of the Varnashram society. And when these principles are broken, then the Varnashrama system, which Krishna creates, will simply be degraded into the caste system, as we see now in society. So this is the position of, if one does not engage in violence, for the kshatriyas, this is what happens. Society simply degrades. Varnashrama becomes simply the caste system. So this is one of the causes of the degradation of the Varnashram system. That's one of the causes, the kshatriya kings not being violent towards the criminals. And another one of the reasons for the destruction of the Varnashram system is because India became dependent upon the foreigners who were not practicing Varnashrama. So this is another reason why the caste system, the Varnashrama, fell into the so-called hereditary system like that. So nonviolence means to be... not cause misery or confusion. So it's not simply causing suffering to others, such as hurting others, killing others, but also not to create confusion. So if one confuses somebody, if you tell somebody you're your body, then that's creating confusion. And that is considered violent. So the devotees of the Lord, they are actually non-violent, because whatever position they take, just like Arjuna, he took the position of killing the miscreants. He was doing a good thing. And the devotees of the Lord, they do a good thing by distributing this transcendental knowledge. By giving the transcendental knowledge, one will help people get out of this confusion that they're the material bodies and that the perfection of life is to eat, drink, and be merry. So by preaching this Krishna consciousness, by distributing these Vedic literatures, by preaching, engaging these different preaching activities, distributing prasadam, to establishing the Varnashram system, which Srila Prabhupada mentioned that by establishing this Varnashram system, we could widely spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. What we are doing now is on a small scale, but if you want to establish Varnashram, if you want to make the whole world Krishna's consciousness, then you have to establish this Varnashram system. So this Varnashrama system has to be done. One devotee was saying, well, probably this brother said, oh, Prabhupada, maybe we should just, you know, now we're going out, we're distributing books and going out, you know, village to village, and maybe we should just focus on this Varnashrama. And Prabhupada said, no. He said, you should distribute books, keep on going on what you're doing, but also do this. So by following these instructions of the spiritual master, by hearing this Vedic literature as it is coming down from the breathing of Narayana through the disciplic session, then we will purify ourselves and we go back to home, back to Godhead. Thank you very much. So if any questions or comments on any of these points? Yes?
Thank you so much, Prabhu. It was a fantastic class. I'm trying to offer you a dose of your own medicine, Prabhu. You mentioned that both material and spiritual knowledge comes from the Vedas. Uh-huh. Where is the source for that?
That's from the source. I believe it's from the first canon of Srimad Bhagavatam. I got it all. I can show you right after the class. I got all my notes numbered.
And thank you. That's all.
Got the exact reference for that. But it's from Srila Prabhupada's books. He mentions that the Vedic, all knowledge comes from the Vedic texts like that. Both mundane and transcendental. Yes.
Thank you, Prabhu, for a very bona fide class. I think everything you said, I either read in Prabhupada's books or heard him say it in the lecture. Thank you. So my question is this. You were talking about Varnashram system, and you mentioned at one point in your class about how the Kshatriyas, they were, they could engage in violence because it was required to curb down the culprits, the criminals.
Yes.
And but at the same time, you know, this is Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement, and it's said also that in this age that Lord, we don't kill the miscreants, but we deliver them. So how did the two tie in together? And those, if we were going to go according to the Varnashram, we'd have to kill everybody because everybody's criminal and culprit. But we're trying to promote Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement simultaneously, which doesn't kill people but delivers them. So where's the balance there?
So what's the balance between killing and...
Justice,
we have to distribute the knowledge, help people, but just like in society, we have people are killing other people. So nobody's... You know, it's not that we should stop that. And Srila Prabhupada never said that should be ever stopped. So that has to go on. And... You have to consider that people are doing, there's different types of sinful activities. So there's sinful activities that are done in knowledge and sinful activities that are done in ignorance. So it's there that, you know, whether or not, whether you have knowledge or not, just like it says, if a child puts his hand in fire, he has to be burnt, whether he knows or not, doesn't know. But still, if you know something, then, you do it anyway, you suffer even more. Srila Prabhupada mentions in this, I think it's in the fifth canto, that, you know, in India they know better, therefore they have to suffer more by engaging in sinful activities. So in the West, they don't know how, you know, what's sinful and what's not sinful. So first we have to teach them Vedic knowledge, and then it has to be established that, okay, like for killing, for example, Prabhupada said you could kill, you know, if you want to eat meat, you could eat some lower animals like the hogs or dogs, but don't kill the cows. So that has to be established. And anybody that can't follow that, once that's set up, if they just can't follow that, then they're just demoniac, and we have to deal with the demons accordingly. But it's not that we're going to immediately, just like there was one, when Prabhupada was on the planets, some devotees or some people that were associated with the movement, they were thinking of blowing up a slaughterhouse. So they they were making the bombs, and you know, they exploded on them instead. You know, so you know, probably didn't like what they were doing. You know, so we can't be fanatics in this way. We have to gradually introduce the Veda culture and make everybody understand this is, you know, anybody could follow this. It's not that all different. There's different classes of men, and we had to accommodate them differently. There's some people, lower classes in society, they were the chandalas, the dog eaters. Certain people, they would drink, take intoxication, and gamble, and different things. That was there, but it has to be under regulation. It can't be in every situation. That's not allowed. So we can't allow such things. But at the same time, facility has to be given to everybody to gradually advance, and we have to give this knowledge to everyone like that.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Okay. Thank you very much. All glory Shri Shri Guru and Gauranga.